This is the afternoon magazine on WILL AM 580. You'll also find us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. In this portion of the program, a conversation with two women, a mother and a daughter. Our guests are Sheila Solomon Klass and her daughter, Perry Klass. Both writers, they recently wrote a book together about their relationship. The title, Every Mother is a Daughter, The Never-Ending Quest for Success, Inner Peace, and a Really Clean Kitchen. When you begin reading this book, you'll soon feel yourself part of a lively conversation between two fascinating women, one a child of the Depression, the other a child of the 60s and 70s. They take turns speaking, and they talk about, well, just about everything. There are many similarities in their lives. They both have full-time careers, and each has three children. They love to read, and they love traveling together. But along with the similarities, there are differences, plenty of differences. Before we begin, let me tell you a bit more about our guests. Sheila Klass is Professor Emerita of English at Manhattan Community College, CUNY, where she has been teaching creative writing for 40 years. She is the author of 16 adult, young adult, and juvenile books, as well as a humorous memoir about her daughter Perry's birth. Her daughter, Perry Klass, is a pediatrician who practices at Dorchester House, a neighborhood health center in Boston. She is also associate professor of pediatrics at Boston University School of Medicine. She's the author of 9 books, including fiction and nonfiction. Listeners, I invite your telephone calls this afternoon for our guests, Perry and Sheila Klass. Your questions and comments are invited. Perhaps you have a mother-daughter story you would like to share with us. So here are the phone numbers. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number, toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Sheila, Perry, good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure. Happy to be here.
Okay. Let's begin with Perry. Perry, this book was your idea. What inspired you?
Well, a couple of things. One was that after my father died 5 years ago, I found myself writing about my father. I write about pretty much everything that comes along in my life. It's kind of what I do with my feelings. And I started writing about my father in a variety of ways. And I kept wishing that he would interrupt me. I mean, I kept wishing that his voice was part of the story, that it wasn't just me talking about him, but that it was my father saying, that's not really the way it happened, or that's not quite how I remember it. And I began to think about, my mother's a writer, and I began to think about how you could have both voices in a story that really belongs to both people. And then when my mother and I actually had the chance to travel together and found ourselves in the middle of a story where we really, really did have very different perspectives, I began to think about how you might write back and forth so that the story really belonged both to me and to my mother.
Yeah, it's a wonderful read. Congratulations
Thank
to the
you.
Two of you.
Thank you.
And Sheila, so now the two of you are discussing this idea over dinner at a restaurant in New York. What did you think about Perry's suggestion that you write a book together?
Well, I thought it was a wonderful suggestion, but I have never, in all the books I've written, I have never written with anybody else. And the only time I ever tried, once I tried to collaborate with my husband, who was very dear, and we got on fine, but we thought of a wonderful idea for a novel. And we decided to write it together, and I had to stop us very soon because I was getting angrier and angrier. It seemed to me that he was dictating and I was typing, and that wouldn't do. So I didn't think I could collaborate with anyone. I told a story to Perry, and I said, you know, Pop and I could have had a divorce as a result of this. And Perry said, well, you can't divorce me.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about Papa. The two of you have both mentioned him now, your husband, Sheila, and Perry's
My
father.
Husband was an anthropologist who taught at Barnard College and Columbia University, and he dearly loved and enjoyed his family, And part of being an anthropologist is traveling as your work. So Perry was born in Trinidad on our first field trip, and it was a wonderful adventure. And I did write a book about her birth because it was so unique and so delightful. And my husband was a full participant in raising the children when men were still rather out of the picture in the society. We were just changing. And he helped me enormously. And he also encouraged me as a writer, and he encouraged me when I wanted to work. So I think I was very lucky.
Yeah, and Perry, he must have encouraged you because at your birth he was concerned that you could never be president of the United States.
Yes, he was very worried about that because I was not born in the continental United States. And there he was, you know, with a newborn baby daughter who really didn't have many skills that would have led you to believe that it was going to be a problem if she couldn't run for president. But my father had unbelievable faith in his children, much more, I have to say, than I as a mother have in my own children. That is to say, he was completely willing to be caught up in anybody's dream. If you wanted to take up an instrument, he thought you had talent, and I certainly didn't. And, you know, anything that you wanted to dream or imagine, he liked to go along vicariously when his children traveled or when his children went off to college and went into fields that he had not himself ever studied. He liked to go along for the ride, and there was something that I now, especially since I've got children of my own growing up, I really understand how exciting that was, this sense that not only did my father think you could certainly do it, I could become a doctor, but he was fascinated to kind of be along for the ride and learn a little more about this world and let you be the guide and give you that sense that you were introducing him to something he had never done or would not be able to do, but that he was excited to hear what it was like.
Hmm. You know, back when this idea for this book was percolating, and Sheila, you know, you reminded Perry that, you know, Papa and I tried to write a book together and it just didn't work, and it nearly caused a divorce. And Perry said, "You can't divorce me." But I wonder if you could divorce one another. Could it have happened while you were working on Every Mother is a Daughter?
I think it's conceivable it could have happened, but I think we would have stopped. You know, we are both smart enough to know when we're in terrible trouble. But, I never thought about it again once we started. We never had any trouble. We didn't always agree, of course, and I was usually right. But we didn't have any trouble.
Well, one advantage we had is, you know, we weren't doing it in the same room the way my parents were when they tried to write a book. That is to say, we live in different cities, and we live in a more electronic age, although my mother is limited in her ability to take advantage of email and other technological improvements. They're there. We weren't actually trying to do this in the same room or even in the same house. We were writing pieces and sending them back and forth to react. And when we did get to see each other, we kind of had a lot of stuff saved up that we wanted to talk about or we wanted to do. I think it's easier, or at least for people like the two of us who aren't really accustomed to this kind of collaboration, it's easier to be the writer alone in your own room, write your piece, and then send it to somebody else. We did have to make a rule, I have to tell you, that we couldn't censor each other. We couldn't change it. If my mother wrote a memory and sent it to me, I couldn't change the details to make them right. I could say, Mom, that's not really what happened, or Mom, you're exaggerating, or Mom, that's not what I think. But I couldn't change her voice or her writing, because part of the point of the book turned out to be that sometimes you remember things differently or sometimes you understand things differently, and you're not going to change each other's mind.
Yeah, yeah. Is this something that you would recommend mothers and daughters do, you know, something like this, or for that matter, fathers and sons?
Well, I think one of the things I came to appreciate doing this book is that as an adult with an adult parent, you get set in certain kinds of routines. It's even if you like each other and you get along well, you still come to take certain things for granted, certain conversations you're going to have over and over again, certain topics that always work, certain places you're just not going to go because, you know, it's going to be an argument or it's going to be a disagreement. And writing the book together for us was a way of going to some of those places, deliberately walking in on some of those disagreements, but also changing the rules a little, having conversations that we otherwise might not have had. And I would definitely recommend that to other daughters, sons, fathers, mothers. I think there's a lot to be said for varying the routine, taking some chances, and finding out how much is really there. Having the conversations that you otherwise don't have, or taking the trip together. Maybe for some people it's not writing it down. That may not be the thing that moves the most or the easiest. But to actually take a look at your parent, at your child as an adult, and say, you know, what's really there? What are you thinking? What do you feel? How do our different experiences overlap, reinforce, disagree? I'm not suggesting that people do things which are going to endanger their relationships, their families, or even their lives. But I do think that there's a lot to be gained from stretching your usual boundaries.
Yeah. Sheila, what do you think?
I absolutely agree, and I think that some of the things that we discovered just by traveling together, just patterns of living and expectations and dining habits. I mean, I know Perry very well, but when I was traveling with her and she never had any breakfast and I was forced to get up and forage for myself, I began to think quite differently about her. That's a minor one, but I think we learned a great deal, even though we thought we knew each other so well, and I think that's very important.
What surprises lay in store for you other than breakfast habits? Both of you could answer this, please.
Well, I think the thing which surprised me most, the sort of larger thing which surprised me most, was how much my mother still feels herself her mother's daughter. I knew going into this book, although I think I came to understand it more and more as the book went along, that I feel myself very much my mother's daughter every day of my life, you know, and I'm a grown-up, and I have three kids of my own, and I have many, many adult identities. I'm a doctor, and I'm, you know, I'm Josephine's mom, or I'm Anatole's mom, or I'm the, you know, the fifth-grade parent, all the things that I am, but I still very much feel like my mother's daughter. I still hear her voice in my head when I do things that I know she would not like me to do, or I actually reach for her voice when I want someone to be proud or to exult. But I didn't realize that that would also be true for my mother, who is almost 80 and who did not get along very well with her own mother.
Right, right.
And so I found myself asking about that as we began writing the book, but I should probably let her speak for herself.
Right.
Well, I was astonished in the course of the book to find out how I knew that a great deal of my mother. I should start by saying that I had great difficulty with my mother, who was a very stern and harsh mother, I thought, and who did not want me to go to school. Ultimately, I had to leave home to go to college, and we just never got on. And she took very good care of me, obviously. Physically, I'm still in pretty good shape, and I'm functioning, and I'm old. And there are things I have to be very grateful for, but I didn't get on, and I must say I didn't like her. And I didn't want to be like her. And yet, as I grew older, I discovered I was very much like her. Oh, my mind went the same way. What I had heard as a child, I thought of in situations. The situation comes to mind is when I first married and my husband came into the kitchen in the evening. My mother never allowed my father in the kitchen. She said he couldn't pour a glass of water. Mm. And so when my husband, who was very competent, professor who had lived as a bachelor and cooked his own meals for years, when he came to the kitchen, I felt uncomfortable, and you know, it was my kitchen, and I told him so. And then of course it was not my kitchen, and once he was in the kitchen, he was in for good, and then we had a very good time there together. But that I should have been thinking that way is what I'm talking about, and that's my mother thinking, that's not me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, you tell that story. When my mother told me that her mother didn't allow the children in the kitchen. And
really?
So my mother said, I never learned to cook. And this is really funny because Sheila says she's not a good cook. She sounds like she did just fine. And my mother said the same thing. You know, I wasn't a good cook. Well, we remember Mother's meals very fondly. But, you know, that led my mother to invite us, and the kitchen actually was the biggest room in our house growing up, and that led her to have us in the kitchen whenever we felt we'd like to be there. So.
And if I may ask, what do you feel about your kitchen?
My kitchen? Oh, my husband and I are in there together a lot.
See, my mother ruled the kitchen, and nobody.
Yeah.
She didn't let the kids in either.
Maybe that, you know, maybe that was part of, that's where women could rule.
Right, right. I've thought of that. I think you're right. That was her territory, and she was kept it the way she wanted, and that's probably the only where she, only place she ruled.
Yeah, yeah. And my grandmother, she was a marvelous cook. So she could showcase her accomplishments in that manner.
And it's understandable, but it took me a very long time. And as I said, I'm not over it yet. These things come into my head, and I'm always amazed.
Yeah. Well, Perry, you know, your mom, once she's out of bed in the morning, she's on her way. And you're different in that respect. The way you were raised, how did that affect you when you married and had children of your own?
Well, my mother believes that you get up in the morning and you get dressed and you put on your shoes and you lace them up and you're sort of set for the day and you get to work on the chores, whether there are chores or not. That's what she believes. My mother will tell you that she's never owned a pair of bedroom slippers, because that's somehow associated in her mind with the kind of person who just slops around the house and doesn't get on with the work. I have to say, she did not pass this on to her own children. I've often owned pairs of bedroom slippers, and, you know, sometimes during the week I get up and I rush out of the house because I've slept till the last possible moment, but if there's time or it's the weekend, I'm very happy to sit around in my pajamas and read the newspaper, and I don't feel the least bit guilty about it. But of course, writing the book with my mother and talking about these things with her made me much more acutely aware of how impossible she finds that. It's not that she doesn't choose to relax a little bit, it's that she can't. And we talk in the book about moments like moments in a hotel where there really aren't any chores to do, right? You're not neglecting the housework or neglecting to go into the kitchen and cook breakfast if you sit around in a bathrobe and a pair of slippers, and they even provide you with the bathrobe and the slippers. But my mother can't put them on. She can't relax that. Well, she doesn't want to. She won't enjoy it. And it's interesting to me both that she feels it this strongly and that she didn't pass it on to me, and I think that I didn't pass it on to my children either. We, I think, all feel a lot less pressured by the idea of that mysterious list of chores and that sense of getting on with the day. If there's a reason to hurry, and we move fast, and then, of course, my mother's scandalized because I don't eat breakfast. my children scavenge for breakfast. You know, they grab a granola bar, or they grab some cheese. But I don't feel that same pressure that something, I don't want to call it immoral, but that something lazy and not really good is happening if you take it easy a little bit in the morning.
Yeah. But really, Perry, you know, taking a look at your biographical sketch, you're not a woman in a bathrobe all day. We should make that clear.
Well, I mean, my mother has a I shouldn't speak for her, but I think her attitude toward me is a combination of a feeling, you know, you do too much, you take on too much, you're too busy, you're driving yourself too hard, but it balances with a sort of disapproval of, you don't do enough, your house is a mess, you know, you're sitting around in bedroom slippers, which may just have something to do with the fact that, you know, none of us are exactly heroes to our own mothers.
Now, Perry begins the book with this statement: I fantasize sometimes about making my mother enjoy things. Sheila, how would you complete that thought? I fantasize sometimes about making my daughter fill in the blank.
Well, that's a difficult difficult one for me. If I had a magic wand, I would have a house for Perry in which all the boring chores were done, and she could do all the things she wants to do. But that doesn't happen. And when I try to help her, I'm often a guest there, and I have nothing to do, and I'm old, but I'm able. And when I want to help, nobody lets me help.
I feel that I have to point out that my mother has never been capable of having any kind of household help herself. She's not capable of having somebody else clean or shop for her or help, and she's not capable of having her own house guests, me, for example, help out in the house either. So the fact that she thinks that it would be easy for me to tell her what to do in my house, even though she could never tell someone else what to do in her own house, is one of those little boxes that, you know, you create, that you get yourself into. I'm not morally opposed to having somebody help me in the house, but, you know, if I've decided that I'm just too tired to tackle the mess and I'm sitting on the couch reading whatever piece of the newspaper happens to have accumulated, and my mother says to me, you know, can I help? Can I clean up? I have nothing to do. It's hard for me not to hear that as, you really should be cleaning the house. Can I help you? Let's get it done.
I wonder.
I don't know about that translation, Per. That's not really what I mean.
I know. Well, it's a little of what you mean. That's okay.
These boxes, are they coming unglued a little bit in terms of that particular issue because of the conversation that you've had writing this book and, you know, the things that you've learned about one another?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think one of the things Perry has pointed out to me, and she's absolutely right, is that the only way that we can operate is by accepting the fact that we're us. We're fully formed, very solid characters. And when you write a novel, perhaps you can move it a little bit, but I don't think you can. I cannot, with my own children. I have three adult children, and they're terrific, but I cannot do anything about anything.
And, you know, similarly, there are things that we might like to alter about our mother or about the way she lives, and you don't get to. I mean, it's the lesson of adult life, and somehow it's an easy lesson to learn with your friends, right? You know, you're going to be friends with so-and-so. So-and-so is who he is. He's always late, or he's anxious, or he's preoccupied, or he lives this way, or he lives that way. You don't ever say to yourself, well, I really want to be friends with so-and-so, but let me make a few adjustments. But somehow, in families, you do that. Wouldn't life be easier for Mom if only she would let us blah, blah, blah?
Yep.
And it's not how it works. You don't get to change people. You sit there on the outside saying, you know, your life would be so much better if you were just a slightly different person, and I love you dearly, so let me make the adjustment. But it doesn't work that way.
Not going to happen.
Nope.
Not going to happen. Sheila, what do your other children, what do Perry's siblings think of Every Mother is a Daughter?
Well, they both love it, though my younger child really surprised me. There's a section about our dog, whom I detested, in the book. And she felt that I gave him a bad name.
She also gave the dog a bad name?
Yes, she felt that I was not fair, that he was just a dog. He wasn't any worse or better than any. She was fonder of him than I, obviously. But it never had occurred to me that she would, after all these years, this would be what she would, her comment on the
book. He's a dog who's been dead for 20 years.
But she was fond of him, and she feels that I didn't treat him fairly.
Boy, we all have boxes, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And the stuff that's in them. And Perry, now, your children, what do they think?
Well, let's see. My daughter, who is just graduated from high school, has actually been quite interested in the book and has read it and has talked about it a little bit with both of us. She feels that she has many things in common with my mother, more than with me, you know, especially around orderliness and housekeeping and various ways in which she's an organized, responsible person much more than I am, and she recognizes some of that in my mother, which has been interesting. And she also, I think, has been a little tantalized by this whole idea that even as you grow up, even when you're in your unimaginable, you know, she's a high school, just a high school senior, the unimaginable 30s and 40s, that your relationship with your mother may still be changing and evolving, that you might, she's asked me if I thought we would travel together someday, sort of as two adults, and just that whole question that things can still be changing and growing and you can still be learning about each other and surprising each other a little bit, I think has impressed her. And my kids have been, you know, this is a book that took me away and took me a little bit more into life with my mother and out of their lives at certain points over the last couple of years. And they've been awfully nice about that. They've been excited about it, and they've thought it was kind of fun that Grandma was doing this with me.
Yeah. Sheila, is there a, like Perry's daughter Josephine, in your relationship, for you as a girl and as a young woman, was there a member of the generation that, you know, the generation before your mother, before your parents, that you identified with?
Well, I had my mother's mother. I had my father's mother was dead, so I never knew her. But my mother's mother, the lady who gave me the stuffed cabbage rabbit recipe, that's it, included in the book. That was a grandmother, and Perry's named for her. And I loved her dearly, and she was very kind to me. And she had seven children, and in those impossible years, she did everything. That is, all the laundry by hand and all the cooking without cans and kosher food. And somehow she managed, and I may have idealized her by now, but I don't remember her complaining. She just somehow did it and managed. And she loved her grandchildren, and I loved her very much.
Mm. And Perry, did you have a close relationship with your grandmothers?
I don't think I had a very close relationship. They were, what I notice with my grandmothers, which is not true with my children, my grandmothers really felt like people from another world, from another life. One of them, I mean, the heir of the old country. One of them had been born in Europe and had come here. The other had been born here, but her whole family had come from Europe. The way they ate and the way they lived seemed different. There was, I don't know if you want to call it a sense of history or a sense of change, a sense of that sort of very American story. People come here, and at first they're immigrants, and then over time they change. That was very present for me with my grandparents, this sense that the generations had changed, that my parents had grown up in a very different way from the way that we were growing up, and that, of course, that's not there so much with my children anymore. Their grandparents are American professional people who live very much like they do. They're growing up in very much the same way that Larry and I grew up, in sort of American middle-class professional families. That sense of sort of history and change and of the kind of the immigrant story is gone. My mother's mother was kind to her grandchildren. I think she loved us, but as my mother says, she's not someone who took a great deal of joy and pleasure in life. My father's mother she taught me to knit, and she taught me, I've got all her recipes. She was a wonderful cook, and there were very specific connections. But as I say, always this sense that visiting them was stepping into a different world.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, mother and daughter, daughter Perry Class and her mother Sheila Solomon Class. They are both writers, among other things that they do in their lives, and they have recently written a book together, a memoir, Every Mother is a Daughter, The Never-Ending Quest for Success, Inner Peace, and a Really Clean Kitchen. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. If you have a question or a comment, join the conversation. Perhaps you have a mother-daughter story you would like to share. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let me remind our listeners that the National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for eastern Coles County in east central Illinois until 1:45 p.m. Central Daylight Time this Monday afternoon. Stay tuned to AM 580 for the latest on the weather. Sheila, why do you think all three of your children are riders?
Well, my son has a theory, which is that since I used to get up very early in the morning before they got up and when they were small, and I would work for an hour or a little more in my office in the house. And David's theory is that they were imprinted the way ducklings are by the sound of those typewriter keys. That's his theory. But I think, and Perry, I think, agrees with me that the enormous pleasure that I have always gotten from writing was evident to them by the fact that I wanted to do this, and it was so exciting to me. And I certainly did not tell them to be writers because, for one thing, my husband and I were determined that they should do what they wanted to do. And for another, I never made a living as a writer. I made my living as a teacher. And it was not an easy path, but it was what I wanted to do. And I think I transmitted the great love which I have still for writing. Yeah. And they just, and I can't tell you how much it delights me that they're such, you know, that they're writers and that they're very different writers.
Hmm. Well, let me mention that Perry is the author of 9 books, including a book for parents about quirky children. And as a matter of fact, we talk with her on this program. Yeah. Back in December of 2003 about that book, Quirky Kids. She's also written about medical training. She's written novels and short story collections and a book about knitting. It seems to me, though, that also along with the pleasures of writing for this entire group of folks, this entire family, the pleasures of reading have also been very important. Who wants to pick up on that?
Well, my husband and I both, we were passionate readers. And in the evenings, every night, he read to the children. And he read, Perry can remember the selections better than I, but he read an enormous amount and very varied. Perry, you want to name a couple of his favorites?
He read the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy. He read us a lot of P.G. Wodehouse, whom he loved. He read all kinds of books, which I then came across later and realized, oh, I've heard the story. He read me Pride and Prejudice. He read a lot of fantasy and children's stories, but as I say, also a lot of adult stories, a lot of plays that he read aloud. And that was very important, I think, to all of us. And this goes back almost... this goes back pretty much as far as I can remember, that he believed that even when we were 4 or 5 or 6, we could follow pretty complicated stories as long as everything was explained. He was a big believer in explaining things to children. And, you know, I can still remember also for theater being taken to see Shakespeare or to see Gilbert and Sullivan, with my father having first explained the jokes so that I understood why they were funny and explained all of the references that he could.
Yeah, what a gift!
Yeah, it's pretty wonderful. I mean, I've thought about that a lot with my own children, and it really is true that if you explain things and if you take the time, children understand why things are funny. And you know, it's a tremendous gift as a child to come across something before you know it's famous, before you understand that you know you're watching Shakespeare. And, you know, all of these lines are very famous and you should recognize them and take it seriously. It's a tremendous gift to just come across it as a story, as a comedy, as a tragedy, as a play. And that's really true also of hearing the story of Pride and Prejudice before you know that it's a particularly famous book or that it's famous for this or it's famous for that, or you've seen a movie and you get to hear it fresh as a story.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful moment when you hear a child say, guess what?
Oh, you know? Yeah. You know, the one that I always that I think of sometimes with my own children is I remember reading a Christmas Carol aloud to my oldest child when he was quite young. And, you know, there's this scene at the end when Scrooge has undergone his change and Bob Cratchit comes back to work and Scrooge is going to fool him. And he's going to pretend to still be that old, stern, angry guy. You know, you're late. Do you know what I'm going to do? And the line is, I propose to raise your salary. And I remember, you know, I remember my son hearing that for the first time. And he didn't know it was coming and he didn't know what was going to happen. And then all of a sudden you realize, this is a good line. This is fun. Somebody who knows what he's doing wrote this story.
Yeah. And, you know, it goes for literature. It goes for corny jokes. It goes for everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And all of a sudden, you know, you as the parent or as the adult, you get to hear it again a little bit new.
Yeah.
And the wonderful thing for my husband was that he loved doing this. Explaining these things was such a joy to him, and acting them out. He was reliving the story for himself, too, I think.
Yeah, he was a very expressive reader, and he would take on the characters.
Right.
Now, let me mention, by the way, Sheila's books. Her two most recently published books are In a Cold Open Field, which is an adult novel marking the tragedy of the Korean War, and Little Women Next Door, a juvenile novel about Louisa May Alcott's bizarre and comic adventure at Fruitlands, where her parents attempted to create a utopian community. That must have been a great, fun book for you to write. I imagine you love writing. It's a pleasurable experience, but I'm unfamiliar with this book, but I think I would like to read it.
Oh, well, that's nice for you to say. And Perry and I actually after the book was published, Perry and I taught a course together in Louisa May Alcott's house. It was a very exciting sort of extra gift after the book was published. The people who run it's a sort of museum. I'm not sure they call it a museum.
It's Orchard House. It's the house that Louisa May Alcott lived in, and about which, you know, in which the events of Little Women took place. So you can tour it and see the rooms where the different sisters lived, and it's now maintained as a memorial, and as a museum of things about the Alcotts. And we got to teach a writing class there for kids, partly because my mother had researched Louisa May Alcott's life and written this book about this very strange moment in her life when her visionary but somewhat impractical father decided to move the family to this commune when Louisa was how old? Louisa was
11.
11.
And they spent one summer there of 15 or so people. Mrs. Alcott, the only woman, she did all the women's work. And they were living together, sharing everything. Money was not important. And it just was a crazy summer, and I was fascinated by it. It only lasted 6 months because since they were all intellectuals who talked a lot, they were terrible farmers. And they couldn't grow anything.
Yeah. I wonder what Louisa May Alcott, did she write about her mother? Did she write about her parents?
I don't know. She did write, there are fragments, I think, Fruitland. She did write a little bit about that adventure, but I do know that Mrs. Alcott had been an accomplished social worker before she married her husband, and then she was just his wife afterwards and did nothing else professionally. And then she suddenly was running this commune. She was doing all the domestic work, including the mending, for 15 people. Mm. And somebody asked him, this is an actual quote I came upon, they asked him, didn't she mind doing all this work? And Mr. Alcott, who was wonderfully absent from reality, he was so smart about a lot of things, but his answer was, oh no, she loves domestic work.
I love that phrase, wonderfully absent from reality. I'm going to save that one. That's great. Wonderfully absent
I like him enormously, but I'm glad I didn't marry him.
Yeah, really. Perry, how did you react when you read these words from your mother? If I ever did any brave thing, I did not do it bravely, but desperately.
Well, one of the struggles in writing this book together was that I think that the way my mother grew up and the way she found her way in life is very impressive and very brave. And my mother, I should tell you, cannot really accept any kind of praise in the same way that she can't spend any money on herself because she doesn't think she deserves it. She doesn't think she deserves luxury. She can't accept praise. And she's quite generous with her children and grandchildren. She'd love to spend money on them, and she thinks they're entitled to every comfort and luxury, and she's quite generous with her praise when it comes to her children and her grandchildren, and she can't praise them enough. But she's pretty hard on herself. So for me to say, Mom, I think the way you grew up to do what you did was brave, to be the first one in your family to go to college, to create a life for yourself that wasn't like any life you had ever seen up close and that wasn't in any way what your parents wanted you to do. I think that in some ways that was very brave compared to, say, what I had to do, which was sometimes, difficult and demanding, but basically I was being a good girl. I grew up with parents who wanted me to do well in school and go to college and, find an interesting way to live and find an interesting job, and they were ready to pay the bills and they were ready to make a fuss over me and cheer me on. And my mother grew up without any of that. If I say, Mom, I think it was brave to invent your own life, to find your own way, she needs to find a way to make it so that I'm not praising her. And it doesn't really sound like she was brave, and it doesn't really sound like she was heroic. So she's going to try to make it sound like everything she did out of fear or desperation or confusion or just luck.
Mm. My mother would do the same thing.
You think it's generational?
I suspect. I suspect. Although I think for myself, when I read those words from Sheila, I think that that's something that I imagine Perry might say about herself. What do you think?
I don't know what the brave things are that I've done exactly. I don't think I'm completely unwilling to accept praise, but I think that there are different kinds of strengths. And I didn't mean to say to my mother, I'm a coward, you're brave. I meant to say to her, look, in order to live these lives, which look so similar, to have a good job that you've chosen and the children and write the books around the edges, we had to do very different things. I had to work hard and I had to want it and I had to be persistent. But you actually had to invent it. You had to defy your parents. You had to take certain kinds of risks that I never had to take. You had to be brave in ways that I've truly never had to be. And she doesn't want those words used about her.
Yeah.
Well, in my own defense, I see this as that I simply had no choice. My parents said no college, and I wanted to go to college. And there's nothing brave in the act of if that's what you have to do. I see that as desperation. And I was very lucky. I found a place to live and a way to live and to support myself while I went to college. And it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't easy. Mm. So I guess, the way we look at ourselves, we have our own mirrors.
Yeah. And we are creatures of our times is something that Perry says about the cooking thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I have to point out that even if you just say to my mother, I like that sweater, that's beautiful, if possible, she needs to tell you that she got it at a discount because it has a flaw, she'll show you. Or if not, that somebody else bought it for her, lest you think that maybe she actually did spend a little money on herself.
Mm-hmm. The time has flown by. We're out of time. It's just been a joy talking with you, a joy reading this book, and I want to thank you for not being wonderfully absent from reality and being wonderfully present in the moment. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Perry Class and Sheila Solomon Class have been our guests in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. The book that they've written together, Every Mother is a Daughter, The Never-Ending Quest for Success, Inner Peace, and a Really Clean Kitchen. Recipes and knitting patterns are included. The publisher, Ballantine Books.